One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Okay, we're good. Welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program. My name is John Case, and we do occasional broadcasts here and podcasts. And in this election season, we've been fortunate enough to talk to several folks that are running for office. And the questions I usually ask are the questions that, you know, I'm trying to make up my mind who to vote for, you know, kind of thing. And it's probably not true that the questions I ask are what everybody else would ask, but then some of them might be the same. So, I try to just explore, you know, what's at stake for me as a voter and for you as a voter. Today, we're honored to have Donna Joy, who's running for the school board, and I'll get her to tell me some more details about, you know, exactly where and when and what she's doing and all that in just a second. It's a coming on the heels of a, we might have to say, historic teacher's strike in West Virginia that has actually sparked rebellions of teachers in a number of other states. Interestingly, states that were heavily voted for Trump pretty much in the last election, and but where there have been a lot of years of you know, no pay increases in benefits for teachers and a lot of extra work and threats coming in from lots of different directions like charter schools and privatization, et cetera, et cetera. So tight budgets, Republican-dominated states for recent years anyway. And yet this rebellion took place. And I think so now, and it was an opportunity for both the public and teachers to get an insight into what's going on in the schools and what the issues really are and what's at stake if you allow your public education system to basically deteriorate or decline with, you know, no end in sight. And I know during the strike we had some of the teachers that were on the program here, and I thought one of the most telling remarks that they made was is about, among the other reasons why this struggle has came to where it came, was that, you know, as teachers, we could not afford to send our own children to school to be teachers. In other words, the college costs were now beyond the income levels of, you know, most people teaching their students. And so right there you have, well, gee, how do professions replace themselves over generations? Well, they do a lot from families. You know, my mom was a teacher. My dad was a teacher. I want to be a teacher, too. Not every kid, but, you know, there's a certain amount of pride and association that goes on there. And so all of a sudden the teachers can't, you know, get their kids to college, and his incomes have fallen down so low. So anyway, we're going to get started here. I think I'm hearing a noise in the background, though.
Somebody's talking.
I know. Well, we got to find that so I can edit that out here. Hold on. It's one of these screens. There we go. Okay. I'll get that edited out. Don't worry about that. Anyway, welcome to the program, Donna Joy. First of all, why don't you tell me who you are? And then again, second is why you are running for the school board, because politics is hard work these days, and maybe it always was. But tell me about yourself.
Okay. So my name is Donna Joy, and I'm currently employed as a math teacher at Jefferson High School. I also teach part-time at several universities. I've been teaching for 30 years. I'm certified in all main subjects, including special education. I have bachelor's degrees in elementary ed and math, master's degrees in psychology and special ed with a minor concentration in neuroscience from Johns Hopkins University. And I have a PhD in educational measurement, statistics, research, and evaluation. I supervise student teachers, and I supervise principals' dissertations. I've written two books. One is a children's book, and one is an academic text. And I have two children that have gone through the Jefferson County school system. The youngest is a senior at Jefferson High School, and she'll be graduating in a few weeks. And then she's going to study biology. So why I'm running, I would like to increase the level of performance of our schools to that of the surrounding counties, Washington, Loudoun, Clark County. I believe that we can do that by focusing on student achievement and marketable skills rather than just graduation rates. We also need to attract and retain the best staff, and we need to redirect the money that we do have towards the programs that are research-based that actually work.
So let me first ask about the last thing you mentioned. What are the research programs that work versus those that do not?
Okay. Well, so for for example, I used to teach in Arlington, Virginia, and that county was ranked in the top 10% in the country.
I graduated from Yorktown.
Okay. I taught at Wakefield, and I taught at Thomas Jefferson. So when I left there in 2001, they had already enacted, based on research, the policy and the where they had the older kids, the higher age teenagers, they went to school later in the day, and the younger kids went to school earlier in the day. And that's because, we still hear about it, read about teenagers, how the brain works, and they need to sleep in. So, but Arlington, they used that research over 17 years ago. So that's one example.
The policy that came after it was guided by that research, research. Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So that's what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. Making our policies based on more on research
than just opinion or
because of tradition, or because it's easier.
Right. So, sometimes the data tells you things that you didn't really want to hear.
Right, exactly.
So performance-wise, within the you implied in your remarks there that there is a bucket of funds available, and that at least for the immediate things, that we're really talking about rearranging that pie in a way that's more effective than currently.
Right.
There are these external issues of increasing the funding overall, obviously, but because there's a huge difference in pay rates, I think, between Loudoun and Jefferson County, for example, and even Washington County, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I know you mentioned on a previous show, I listened to the interview with Kevin Cardin, you said $15,000, but that's only maybe the first year. After 10 years, that difference is even larger. And also, they have a lot more benefits than we do, aside from just the,
wage rate.
Yeah.
So in any event, but you're talking immediately about a rearranging of priorities within whatever the basket currently really is. And my understanding is that right now, for example, that if you were to go out in the county and try to raise money to raise, for example, the pay or add a benefit for teachers, that the state system says, oh, I'm sorry, if you raised a dollar, you get to keep 10 cents of it, and 90 cents gets redistributed to everybody else. Is that the kind of situation we're looking
right.
at?
Yeah, there is a cutoff for how much teachers can make in each county. It's controlled by the state. And that's a problem, and that's something that I personally would like for our unions to represent us on. A problem that we have is the unions represent the whole state, So they don't advocate for locality pay. And a lot of teachers and, you know, employees, county employees, school employees don't realize that that's the situation.
You know, it's interesting. If you, let's suppose, just an example here, that one could, in Jefferson County, over a 3 or 4 year or 10 year period, raise the pay of Jefferson County teachers to be comparable to Loudoun County. Let's just suppose you could do that. I mean, it might be possible to make an argument that, okay, and this assumes that there was a locality pay, you know, exception of some sort, right, that was negotiated. Well, I mean, actually, the number of people that would be attracted to Jefferson County, the number, the kinds of companies that would be investing in places where you were investing in your human capital, okay, big time, you might increase employment in Jefferson County schools or area schools that adopted this policy of basically investing in their people, okay? And, you know, folks from southern West Virginia that have become depleted of resources in many ways could move up here and...
Right. It would benefit.
Might benefit, you know, in the long run, yeah. So there would be a migration of some sorts, but... I'm just trying to think of good statewide arguments that might work, you know, but all right. So within that, we're going to divide up the existing pie and where should we start looking at places to do better?
I mean, so first of all, our superintendent makes $185,000 and then she has this, I believe, a house and a car. I might be wrong about the car. And that's more than the state superintendent of California. There's no justification for a superintendent here. We have 10,000 students to make that much money. So that's something that should be looked at. I've just estimated $1 million that we could easily redirect. We've allocated $400,000 for attorney fees. And most of these fees are used to fight parents and community members, teachers, staff who are right. So a problem is our superintendent, maybe she hasn't been trained or advised in how to negotiate with the public when a community comes in. For example, Community Shiloh, they were upset that the new bus terminal was being built in their backyard. They wanted some basic allowances, and it had to go to court. And had some people just sat down and negotiated, it wouldn't have gone that far. Same thing with parents and teachers that I know that have filed grievances over grade changing, treated disrespectfully. These are things that shouldn't leave the superintendent's office. And if they do leave, then the board needs to oversee these issues and say, wait a minute, we don't want to spend this money on a lawyer. Let us have a stab at it. You know, there's five of us on the board. Let's see if we can negotiate before we take that to court and, you know, spend all that money. We have, I believe it's $40,000 for a public relations firm. Our school system is way too small to even have a public relations firm, let alone spend $40,000 a year on it. These are, you know, a press release. I mean, how much do you need to get out to the public every now and then? So that's something else that I would seriously look at. Some other things are the... So we contract out for various services, just like the one I just mentioned, the public relations firm, but also the HVAC, heating and air conditioning. These are things that would be much cheaper if we kept them within the school system, and it would also give our employees more work.
Right.
So then there's the... issue. PEIA is controlled by the state, but we contract out for our own vision and dental care. And these haven't been up for bid in over 10 years. companies that I've talked to, and I can't remember the names, I don't have it written down, but it's estimated that we could save over 30%, which is about 30,000 at least, just by changing the, or at least opening up to cheaper.
Bid, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So those are just a few, and you know, that's not been my focus. So I can't, you know, if I had a chance to be on the board, then I could look into all these more thoroughly.
Right.
But this is just by, you know, I come across these along the way and go to the board meetings. And
there's currently no current teachers on the board. Is that correct?
That's right. Mr. Mark Osborne was a principal. He's a retired principal, but there's no other teachers on the board.
So what's the, I mean, for example, I mean, I know, and this would be hard to summarize, I understand, but I mean, what, having teachers be on the board, or a teacher or some, whatever, I mean, you're running for a election at large, so it's, why is it that a board that doesn't have the voice of teachers right on it, I mean, it seems to me it would be an inherently weaker board in some respect.
Right. So having a teacher on the board, a teacher, well, especially, I can speak for myself. I'm certified in all main subjects, including special ed. So I know the special ed laws. Well, currently, there's been a lot of money spent on dealing with just getting the school to follow basic special ed laws. We're really far behind in just following federal laws and special ed. Having somebody on the board that knows special ed laws could nip that in the bud. That would save money. And plus, these kids that need services would be getting the services they need. So then the issues that would come up as far as, you know, amongst the employees, teachers understand what it's like to work in the schools. They know what works in their classes. They see the problems, but they very seldom do teachers have a voice. And if they do, they have to go through the union. And then the union is pretty much, their hands are tied. We don't have a strong union. I know that we were able to get the you know, money with the strike, but that took the whole state. And so there's not a whole lot we can do. Our union reps really have to go in and be extra friendly to kind of get things accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So having an educator on the board would help give another set of eyes and insight that would be missed.
So let me, two highly, so it's fairly controversial issues here in the state of West Virginia, and I guess nationally, is that one is violence in schools, and the other one is the current opioid epidemic, and whether that seems to be affecting the schools as well. I mean, those two might be related. I'm not sure. What's your experience on that? And this is, I think this is going to be an issue on the table of every educational body, probably, given the recent environment. How do you feel about all that?
Well, so personally, I would look at the school systems that work, and we're fortunate enough to have, is it still on? Montgomery County is ranked number one in the country for school safety programs. They have a security and safety department. They have, you know, aside from cameras, they have resource officers in the schools. They the highest level of training, and then they do checks on their system regularly. So those are just some of the reasons that they're ranked number one. I think that we should go after the systems that are working and follow the model. Mm-hmm. As far as the opioid drug problem, Braxton County is the first in our state to implement a school-based mental health program. That's through Community Care of West Virginia. And this program, it teaches teachers how to deal with kids at the earliest ages, and they do it through role playing and games. So we need to start with kids as at the earliest age, just like we did with Just Say No to Drugs, that big campaign, and right. where all the kids, they made posters and things. So kids need to learn, and it needs to be a part of the curriculum. They need to be There needs to be social workers in the schools. The current school board, I know from the forums we go to, they talk about, well, we're getting counselors in the schools and more counselors, but school counselors aren't trained to do social work. They're not trained to deal with the problems that some of our kids have, severe poverty, malnutrition, right. Homelessness, and they're children of drug addicts often.
Right.
So we really need social workers for the kids to go to. And I know you didn't mention this, but I want to put this in that same category. Children need to learn about their own sexuality,
right.
as at a young age, and boys and girls, to what the boundaries are, what you're allowed to do, what is your body, how to be assertive and say no as far as drugs, mm-hmm. as far as your body. Just
yes. Yeah. So that's good, but I mean so that's a how many, I mean, if you're in front of the classroom though, I mean, for poverty's a tough thing to fix. I mean, really. And I'm not sure you can fix it except by getting rid of poverty. How do you? So does that put a lid on the progress that you can make?
That's what we have been taught to believe, and yes, it does damper, but it doesn't assure that it doesn't make it impossible. I mean, we need to teach children how to deal with their situations, how to cope with the different situations. And then the school, it would be nice if we could provide some of the extra support through the social workers, through, I would like to see classes led by these social workers, parenting classes.
Interesting.
Teaching the parents how to cook healthy meals on a low budget, just a lot of support after school programs, not just for daycare, but for teenagers, and especially in places like the mountain where those kids really have nothing to do. It takes 45 minutes for the bus from the mountain to get down to the wellness center, to even do the swim team. I know my daughter was on the swim team, and it's much more difficult with transportation for, kids in these remote places. So we would need some sort of outreach programs, mm-hmm. social worker, a rec center, working with Parks and Rec to get something for these kids. And I had mentioned before, computers and the need for computers, and a lot of, the public took that out of context. A woman wrote letters to the editor. I want to talk about the importance of teaching children about computers at an early age. So number one, kids like the ones on the mountain who don't have families that can help them with their homework, who don't have somebody to sit with them and help them read. But we have computer programs that are $7 per student. If that child could go home and work on the computer program, these computer programs talk, they help them sound out words. I mean, that's a big help.
Right.
So, and then also there are some kids that, a whole chunk of kids with special needs, they rely on computers for learning. There are so many advanced programs for dyslexia. They'll make the letters a different color on the computer screen. Mm-hmm. You can't find that in a textbook.
No.
So there is a high need for the computer technology at the younger age to get kids used to using them. Another reason is because the state tests are computer-based, and they start at fourth grade. So they need to be, you know how to use a keyboard.
Or they won't even finish the test, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So that would require, so the infrastructure of bringing computers into people's homes where they may not have one, or where the one that's there is, I don't know, loaded with violence or pornography or something. Okay, I mean, you have lots of environmental situations, obviously, that are. So that would be. There must be some companies that are interested in helping sponsor those kind of things. That sounds like, I used to work for Microsoft. That sounds like something Bill Gates would love to do in a way, you know. But
yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. And I had mentioned before the show, about Arlington. And it was in the show about the progress. When I left Arlington in 2001, they had already started giving every student a laptop. And that was 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we all need laptops, but I mean, that would be nice. And there are ways to make that happen. I think that we should be writing grants. I mean, part of the job of a superintendent is, I would believe, it's to write grants. And if not, we could take that person that's making the $40,000 a year, the press, to do press
right, and have them write some grants.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, you've got Santa Claus bag full of ideas here, okay, and also a lot of experience behind it. I was struck when you were talking. You've obviously got a lot of experience and you're a professional at this, but I remember talking to a doctor friend of mine who had just become a pediatrician, and her first assignment was that she was going to be assigned to a clinic in a very poor community. She was trying to pay back some of her college loans, and she got depressed about the health outcome situation when she was working there, because and I remember we had dinner one night, and she says, you know, I go days, weeks, and there's no successes, because a lot of people are very ill and had been, you know, very difficult situations, right? And you write prescriptions and you propose remedies, but the environment is bad enough where it doesn't take for reasons. And she got despondent about it. And so I wonder, in the service professions, you know, like and especially like teaching, you know, you have there has to be some success stories, enough success stories along the way. Like you were saying earlier, right, you may have poverty, but it's not assured that you can't win. How do you feel, how's the morale of teachers, you know, now in Jefferson County and before or after the strike, independent of the strike? What's the morale of the teachers like and their attitude toward satisfaction from their jobs?
Well, I think that it's it all depends on the individual, but it's usually up to the principal. The principal sets the tone for the school. If you have a fair, competent administrator, then you know the staff will be moderate. You know, will be happy. I think the main thing that teachers want, aside from a healthy, happy wage, is respect. And so, you know, we need to teach our administrators, especially from the top down, how to communicate with the employees, the public, because that's the most important quality that we can offer that we don't have to pay for. But so that really affects the morale. Did you mean as far as the students and
In other words, I mean, I think an important part of, you know, if you're doing a job all the time and you know, your most important relationship is probably with your students, okay, and maybe secondly with their parents or your coworkers, you know, I mean there's communities in these things, right? And then, but if you have if there are successes that you're teaching inspired, you know, some of your you know, everybody gets inspired at different levels at different times, right? So I'm not asking about perfection, but I mean, there's satisfaction if you get successes, right? I know. I used to do, you know, teaching myself to some extent, but is that And that affects morale big time. You know, whether you feel like you're getting something good accomplished.
Right.
I guess that's that was the main direction of my question.
Well, I mean, I agree that as far as working with the students, personally, I have taught in the highest poverty areas in the country. I taught in West Baltimore and I taught in the city jail. And so, you know, any success makes me happy. That you got them to do their homework. They came to school regularly. You know, they said thank you instead of, you know, yelling. So I think that everybody's different. For me personally, you know, I go into the job knowing that's my job and it's not dependent on the outcome of the child, that, you know, I'm just do my best. So for me, it's been, you know, just the respect that you get and the camaraderie with the other teachers. If there are programs, we used to have a mentoring program in Jefferson County Schools where new teachers had a senior teacher. So if they had problems, somebody to talk to, those kinds of things are helpful. And like you said, when you keep seeing students that aren't successful, which I've had a lot of those because I taught kids with severe emotional problems, special ed. I taught special ed for 15 years, but that was my job, and I went into it knowing this. But, I mean, I can tell you ways to improve student learning if that...
I mean, that's obviously there are ways. I mean, I just wondered whether I've seen situations where people are so down. For example, I talked to a teacher over in Berkeley County not too long ago, and they couldn't hold people that were certified teachers. The place was so many substitutes coming in that.
But was it because of the students or was
no?
It-
this was they felt the students were being underserved. Okay, and
right.
You had situations coming up where people that didn't have any training or a mentor to explain to them, oh, this situation can be addressed, and so you would have.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's
problems.
Not usually the children that cause the teachers the problems. It's the administration, how the schools run, things of that nature. But right. That's my personal experience.
Well, I mean, that's what you're taking to the job, right? So we're tell me who gets to vote. Are you voting county? Is it countywide? Who gets to vote for you? Okay.
Anybody in the county can vote for me.
Okay. Do you vote for more than one, or how's the...
You can vote for up to three school board candidates.
Well, I think there needs to be a teacher on the school board.
I agree.
You know, so I could just tell from talking to you. I mean, I've learned so much from just hearing you talk about your job and your profession and your dedication to it. And I really appreciate you taking that. You want to have a closing thing here?
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
All my life experiences in education, I believe, have led me to this moment and made me realize that serving on the school board is how I can be of greatest service. I have the perfect credentials and the heart for the position. It's a tough lesson when we find out that what we've been doing isn't working. I'm not afraid to address the areas needing change. My commitment to our schools and my community is evident in my tenacity to continue working to improve the schools. So when I said in the beginning that I would like to raise the quality of our schools to that of the surrounding counties, I believe that we could do that by focusing on student achievement and marketable skills rather than just graduation rates. And we also need to attract and retain the best teachers. So I'm Donna Joy, and I'm asking for your vote. Thank you.
On May the 8th, and I think early voting is going underway now. Thank you so much, Donna. And that'll be it for the day. We'll get this podcast up here and rest by this afternoon. And thank you so much for joining us. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.